lofty domed interior, they fell to their assigned tasks and checked out the life support equipment. If the dome was unusable, they would have to live for the entire year and a half of their stay on Mars in the spacecraft module that had carried them to the Red Planet and landed them on its surface. None of them wanted that. 5 months cooped up in that tin can had been more than enough. The dome was intact, its life support equipment functioning adequately, its nuclear power generator still providing enough electricity to run the habitat. "I knew it would be," Jamie said to himself. "Mars is a gentle world. It doesn't want to harm us." Possum Craig and Tomas Rodriguez, the NASA-provided astronaut, started the oxygen generator. It was cranky after 6 years of being idle, but they got it running at last, and it began extracting breathable oxygen from the Martian atmosphere to mix with the nitrogen that had kept the dome inflated for the past 6 years. The rest of the explorers went outside and fell to their assigned tasks of setting up the video cameras and virtual reality rigs to record their arrival on Mars and transmit the news back to Earth. With his stone fetish tucked into the thigh pocket of his spacesuit, Jamie remembered the political flap he had caused when the first expedition had set foot on Mars, and he had spoken a few words of Navajo instead of the stiffly formal speech the NASA public relations people had written for him. And he remembered one thing more. The ancient cliff dwelling he had seen, built into a high niche in the soaring cliff wall of the Grand Canyon. But he dared not mention that to the others. Not yet. Houston, the first meeting. Jamie had met the expedition's science team for the first time in a tight little windowless conference room in NASA's Johnson Space Center near Houston. The two women and three men had been chosen out of thousands of candidates, their names announced weeks earlier. Jamie himself had been selected to be their leader only 2 days ago. "I know what you're going through," Jamie said to the five of them. This was the first time he had met the four scientists and the expedition's physician face to face. Over the months of their training and Jamie's own struggle to be included in the second Mars expedition, he had communicated with each one of them by electronic mail and talked with them by picture phone, but he had never been in the same room with them before. Now he stood, a little uneasily, at the head of the narrow conference table, feeling like an instructor facing a very talented quintet of students, younger, more certain of themselves, even more highly qualified than he himself. The four scientists were seated along the rickety oblong table, their eyes on him. The physician-psychologist sat at the table's end, an exotic-looking Hindu woman with dark chocolate skin and midnight black hair pulled straight back from her face. They were all in mission coveralls, coral pink with name tags pinned above the breast pocket. The physician, Vijay Shekhtar, had tied a colorful scarf around her throat. She was watching Jamie with big, coal-black, almond-shaped eyes. None of the others had added to their standard uniform, except C. Dexter Trumbull, who had sewn patches on both his shoulders. One bore the microscope and telescope logo of the International Consortium of Universities, the other the flying T symbol of Trumbull Industries. "We're going to be living together for more than 3 years," Jamie continued, "counting the rest of your training and the mission itself. I thought it's high time we got to know each other." Jamie had fought hard to be accepted for the second expedition. He would have been happy to be included as a mission scientist. Instead, the only way he could get aboard was to accept the responsibilities of mission director. "You said our training," the geophysicist Dexter Trumbull interrupted. "Aren't you training for the mission, too?" Trumbull was handsome, with dashing film star looks, dark curly hair, and lively bright eyes the blue-green color of the ocean. As he sat back comfortably in his padded chair, he wore a crooked little grin that hovered between self-confidence and cockiness. He was no taller than Jamie, but quite a bit slimmer, a nimble, graceful dancer's body compared to Jamie's thicker, more solid build. He was also 10 years younger than Jamie, and the son of the man who had spearheaded the funding for the expedition. "Of course I'm training, too," Jamie answered quickly. "But a good deal of what you're going through, the Antarctic duty, for example, I did for the first expedition." "Oh," said Trumbull. "Been there, done that, eh?" Jamie nodded tightly. "Something like that?" But that was more than 6 years ago, said Mitsuo Fuchida. The biologist was as slim as a sword blade, his face a sculpture of angles and planes. If you are a computer, he added, with the slightest of smiles cracking his hatchet-sharp features, you would be an entire generation behind. Jamie forced a returning smile. I'm being upgraded. I'm requalifying on all the physical tests, Jamie assured them, and putting all the latest programming into my long-term memory. I won't crash or succumb to bite block, don't worry. The others laughed politely. Fuchida dipped his chin in acknowledgement. Only joking, he said, a bit sheepishly. Nothing to it, Jamie said, smiling genuinely now. Well, I don't know about the rest of y'all, said the stubby, sad-faced geochemist that Jamie knew as Peter J. Craig, but I'm damn glad we got an experienced man to come along with us. Craig had a bulbous nose and heavy jowls dark with stubble. Let me tell you, he went on, pronouncing you as you, I've been out in the field a lot of years, and there's nothing that can replace real experience. We're lucky to have Dr. Waterman heading up this rodeo. Before anyone could say anything more, Jamie spread his hands and told them, Look, I didn't come here this afternoon to talk about me. I just wanted to meet you all in person and sort of say hello. We'll be talking to each other individually and in smaller groups over the next few weeks. They all nodded. You people are the best of the best, Jamie went on. You've been picked over thousands of other applicants. The research proposals you've presented are very impressive. I've studied them all, and I like what I've seen, very much. What about the cooperative studies? Trumbull asked. While on Mars, each of the four scientists would carry out dozens of experiments and measurements under direction from researchers back on Earth. That was the only way to get the full cooperation and funding help from the major universities. Jamie said, I know they're going to cut into the time you have for your own work, but they're part of the mission plan, and we'll all have to pitch in on them. You too? Certainly me too. I'm not going to spend all my time on Mars at a desk. They grinned at that. And listen, if you run into problems with scheduling, or the demands from Earth's side get to be troublesome, tell me about it. That's what I'm here for. It's my job to iron out conflicts. Who gets priority? Craig asked. I mean, if it comes down to either doing my own stuff or doing what some department head from CalFLOP U wants, which way do we go? Jamie looked up at him for a silent moment, thinking. This is a test, he realized. They're sizing me up. We'll have to take each case on its own merits, he told Craig. But my personal feeling is that in case of a tie, the guy on Mars gets the priority. Craig nodded agreement, acceptance. Jamie looked around the table. Neither of the two women had said a word. Shekhtar was the medic, so he wasn't surprised that she had nothing to say. But Trudy Hall was a cellular biologist and should contribute to the discussion. Hall looked to Jamie like a slight little English sparrow. She was tiny, her thick, curly brown hair clipped short, her coral coveralls undecorated except for her name tag. Alert, gray-blue eyes, Jamie saw. She had the spare, lean figure of a marathon runner and the kind of perfect, chiseled nose that other women pay plastic surgeons to obtain. Any questions? Jamie said, looking directly at her. Hall seemed to draw in a breath. Then she said, Yes. One. What is it? Jamie asked. She glanced around at the others, then hunched forward slightly as she asked in a soft Yorkshire burr, What's it like on Mars? I mean, what's it really like to be there? The others all edged forward in their seats too, even Trumbull, and Jamie knew that they would get along fine together. He spent the next 2 hours telling them about Mars. Arrival Ceremony, Sol 1. They had landed only minutes after local dawn to give themselves as much time and daylight as possible for unloading their landing ascent vehicle and getting their domed habitat restarted. And they had to allow time to transmit a landing ceremony back to Earth. It had been agreed that the explorers would check the habitability of the old dome first, and only after that conduct the ritual of presenting themselves to the Earth's waiting, watching billions. Of course, the instant they had touched down, cosmonaut Anastasia Dezhurova had notified Mission Control in Tarawa that they had landed.